I'm talking about
Ray Appleton on News Talk 580 KMJ.
We talked to them the other day in KMJ News, the co-directors of a film called Gashole, narrated by the actor Peter Gallagher. We're going to be talking to them in extended form the next hour. We only had about 3 or 4 minutes with them, and you loved it. And I'll explain what they're all about and what the film is all about when we get into the next hour. The film has been scheduled for a Fresno showing, and we'll let you know about that as well.
Here we go.
Where am I?
You're listening to Ray Appleton.
Had these guys on the air the other morning at Fresno's Morning News, and you liked it. And there's certainly more to be talked about on this subject of gas and oil and what's gone on in the past that might affect our future. And they put a film together, a documentary called Gashole. Gashole. Narrated by the actor Peter Gallagher. Judy Duggan, who is a former LA Times reporter, current research director for the consumer watchdog oilwatchdog.org, says Gashole's mix of history and classic muckraking pulls back the curtain of the hidden hand of the oil industry, exposing how it steals from our bank accounts, our economy, and our climate. If you buy gasoline, this is a must-see film. The co-directors are Scott Roberts and Jeremy Wagner. Jeremy, is that how we say your last name? Whoops, wait a minute. Push the right button here. Hi, guys.
Hi, how you doing, Ray?
Is it Wagner, Jeremy?
Yeah, Wagner. That's close enough.
There was that extra letter in there, and I was like, is that right or what, man? So, good to have you guys both back here.
Well, thanks for having us again. We appreciate it.
Hey, how did you ever get Peter Gallagher to narrate this?
Well, a friend of mine was on the OC, the TV show with him.
Mm-hmm.
Her name was Melinda Clark, who played Julie Cooper, and she introduced us, and we went to his house and talked to him about the movie and what we wanted to do, and he committed right then.
Something I don't know if I asked you the other day or not. I can't remember. Whose idea was it to do this?
It was actually Scott's idea. He lives up there in your area in Turlock, and he was reading in the Modesto Bee a letter to the editor about 2.5 years ago, written by a gentleman also from the area who had seen something when he was a young man that made him stop and think and write a letter to the editor when gas prices got started really jumping up there. And what had happened is when he was a teenager, he used to race cars with his buddies, and this guy had showed up where they used to race cars and said that he had invented a water-injected carburetor that enabled him to get 100 miles to the gallon. And this was in 1946, I believe.
Yeah, in the late 40s. And the guy just told him straight off that Shell Oil bought his patent, made him a millionaire, and he could keep the ones that he had put on his cars, but he couldn't build anymore. And at that time, you know, I mean, fuel economy really wasn't an issue, so he didn't think anything of it. He was like, wow, how lucky is this guy? But it didn't really hit him until many years later when, you know, we hit about $2.50 a gallon. And he thought, geez, I wonder what happened to that invention.
Hmm.
And that's what started this entire journey for Jeremy and myself. And it's been an incredible journey, and what we found out is shocking.
Well, stories like that, and that particular story, we hear these all the time, especially in this area. This is a very rich car area. A lot of great drivers from this area, a lot of great mechanics from this area. A lot of cars have been built in this area that have gone on to glory. The story you just told, were you able to document it? Were you able to it, is it true?
Well, this is what we found. We went and interviewed the gentleman, and from there we started looking at, well, you know, there's got to be a patent for it. So we found a patent that was registered by a mechanic in the area that actually lived, you know, less than 20 miles from our witness, and it was for a carburetor at the time, and And Scott actually talked to his son early on in the filmmaking.
It was interesting because if you look for patents under fuel economy, we couldn't really find anything, and I stumbled across this patent, and it was originally designed to get rid of engine knock. And then in the small print on the back of the patent, it said, by the way, we got unbelievable fuel economy. And so putting the pieces of the puzzle together and the time frame and the area it was in, Jeremy and I thought, well, how would somebody who lived here in the mid to late 40s, how would he get it to Shell and kind of, you know, go to the next step? And then we realized that Shell actually had a research laboratory in Modesto, which was like, you know, 15 miles from his home.
Well, they did. I can vouch for that. They did have that research laboratory. Shell Oil back then, he was, I guess he was general by that time. No, he was still colonel, I think. Jimmy Doolittle was a member of the Shell board. He was a bigwig with Shell Oil. And I knew him in the very last years of his life. And he talked about that Modesto research facility a couple of times. So at least I know that was there. that much I know. So
we started just trying to, you know, again, put it together. And we go, okay, well, here's a guy who invented a patent in the area at the same time. And this explains how he got it to Shell. Because, you know, if you're a mechanic, you go, well, what do you do with it? And there's a Shell laboratory full of scientists down the road. Okay, that makes sense. And then the next thing that we found that seemed to at least corroborate the story is we tracked down there was a book that Shell had put out years later called Fuel Economy of the Gasoline Engine. And in that book, there's a segment where they talk about that Shell scientists used to do races to see how what kind of gas mileage they could get with their fuel. And they documented in this book, and I have a picture of it, a 1947 Studebaker that got 150 miles to the gallon.
And so, the interesting part is we found the research scientist that worked for Shell for over three decades, and he's in our movie. And, you know, it was just amazing to us how flippant he was about saying, well, yeah, you know, in 1939, you know, we were getting about 50 miles per gallon, but, you know, nobody really got excited until we were hitting, you know, 200, 300, and 400 miles per gallon later.
Huh.
And it's like, well, wait a minute. I think people nowadays would love to get 50 miles per gallon, and they were testing on, they weren't testing on concept cars that, you know, it's not like some motorized skateboard. They were doing it on Ford Galaxies and Studebakers and, you know, 5,000 and 6,000 pound cars.
But he wouldn't divulge what they were doing.
Well,
would he?
The idea was just to see, you know, at the beginning, it was just, you know, again, fuel economy wasn't so much of an issue before World War II, and which is when they started the test. And it was just something, you know, just a part of their research to see, you know, how good they could do.
Okay, well, did Shell Oil just basically bury this technology for the sake of profits?
Well, the thing is, we were not able to prove whether or not Shell could purchase this particular patent and whether or not they buried it. But a lot of the information we found sure seems to indicate that. But the part of this is that this was just the start for us in this film. It's not just about this one patent and this
right.
one piece of technology. What that led us to, we have three different stories of different ideas and different pieces of technology where you hear some very similar stories.
And one of which was by a gentleman named Tom Ogle, who had invented an Oglemobile. And his entire invention process was documented by the El Paso Times. And we spoke to the gentleman who knew him and was actually on his drive when he took his vehicle, which was a 1970 Ford Galaxy, and put 2 gallons of gasoline in it and drove from El Paso, Texas to Deming, New Mexico and back, which the round trip was about 205 miles is what he got. And, you know, and this is a story and this is documented in the newspaper where oil companies came to him and threw him a lot of money for the invention. And he said no, because it was right in the height of the Mideast oil embargo. And he wanted to bring his invention to market. and he was going to look for a company that would do that for him. So he turned down a lot of money and ended up going with a company in Seattle who said they were going to bring it to market. Unfortunately, that never happened, and in, was like 1977, that was the end of it.
Well, okay, that's a little weird, though. Why didn't it happen? I mean, was what did an oil company get to this company or what?
Well, they found him dead out in the desert when he was 24. And so the company that paid him a lot of money to market it from Seattle after his death then came out saying it didn't work.
This is spooky stuff. And you've got good documentation on it.
We got it all. Yeah, it's in the newspapers. I mean, it's public record.
Okay. Well, yeah. So it happened, that's for sure.
Well, there was definitely a Tom Ogle. He definitely made that trip, and he definitely passed away.
What else have you found that you included in this movie?
Well, we have a gentleman who actually read about Tom Ogle and the technology and what he was doing, and he was a mechanic for an airliner. And so in the early 80s, he thought that he would, you know, invent a similar device and see what happened with him. And I guess he doubled his miles per gallon. He was working on an old Ford Pinto. And doubled his miles per gallon and was so excited about it, he called the newspapers and he called people and said, listen, I want to take this to the track, and I want you guys to document it for me. And he went public with it, and without divulging too much, because obviously we don't want to give away our whole movie.
No, and I don't want you to either.
But certain things happened. Certain things happened to him, which made him stop doing what he was doing immediately. And he talks about it in the movie.
Okay. In your research for this film, putting together the film, did you run into any situations yourself where you found hostility?
What we can say is that after the film was finished, we've been putting together a tour. And if you're interested in seeing the film, you can go to gasholemovie.com and see where we're playing. What we've decided to do is we're going to take the film on tour so we can talk to people. So it's such a big topic, and there's so much to fit into it. We couldn't get everything into the movie, so we're taking it on the road over 40 cities. But what happened was is we'd originally partnered up with an organization to help raise money for an organization called Clean Cities. And they're a very central, not a right, not a left. They're just a practical organization, which is kind of what our take on the whole topic is. And they have people that sponsor them that certainly put pressure on them to not work with us.
Yeah, so
after we'd already booked cities.
Yeah, so basically we were in D.C. We screened it for a lot of these coordinators because they were so excited about the possibility of doing fundraisers with them. I think we were in 28 cities with them, and a couple of people came to the screening who weren't necessarily invited that had interests in certain corporations, and they were basically told not to support the film or their funding would get cut. And so now we're down to about 7 cities that we're doing with the Clean Cities Coalition, and those 7 cities are cities that don't receive funding from the certain corporation.
Very interesting. You do have that Fresno show booked, though, correct?
Yeah, we actually, the response from being on your show yesterday was so positive, we are going to be at the Tower Theater on July 8th. And Jeremy and I will both be there, and just like in every city, and we'll do a screening, and then we'll do a Q&A afterwards. And like we said, in each city, we're trying to find an organization that has something to do with alternative fuel education, and then do it, being endorsed by them, and then give them a donation afterwards from the proceeds.
Great. I'll be in Russia. Thanks, guys.
Oh, are you really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's too bad.
I'll be in Russia. Over there solving their oil and gas problems.
But we're actually, you know, we have a couple of shows. I'm sure your listeners are in the area to see, and that's Turlock, California, which is my hometown, and that's going to be on April 18th at the Turlock Community Auditorium, and we're having the screening, a Q&A session, and a really nice after party at the Tower Health and Wellness Center. So tickets are actually going pretty quick. So if you want to go, you can check out our website or call the Tower Health and Wellness Center.
But you've been able to make some national inroads with this movie, have you not?
Yeah, we've been asked to be guests on Good Morning America. We're putting that together for April 30th. And then also a show on ABC called Top Priority. And so, I mean, listen, when gas was $2 a gallon, people got up in arms, and then they became numb to it. Then we hit $3, and the same thing happened. And now I think people, when they're pulling up to the pumps and they're seeing that big number $4, I think now people are really going, wait a minute, you know, what is going on? And so the response has been tremendous.
Let me take a quick commercial break here, and we'll come back and talk more about this documentary called Gashole. With Scott and Jeremy, who have put this together. And some of the stuff that we've already talked about is, you know, it may sound far-fetched. That's why I keep asking them, you know, have you documented this? Is this documentable? And it sounds like they've done their homework, which helps the credibility of the film. We'll be right back. This is KMJ. Welcome to KMJ. Welcome back to the Appleton program. Talking about a documentary called Gashole, narrated by the actor Peter Gallagher. Scott Roberts, Jeremy Wagoner here, and they are the co-directors of the film. And we've got like 94,000 people lined up on the phones here that want to talk to the gentleman, and we will get to the phone calls here. You kind of chuckled when I said, have you met, you know, any hostility in putting this film together? How about in the individuals that you are interviewing? Some of the older people that you talked to, was there any hint of threat there that maybe they were individuals on the other side that were individuals that were involved in the taking of that device or whatever it was that gave the automobile 100 miles to the gallon? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think, you know, to no surprise to anyone, you know, obviously we requested to talk to pretty much every oil company and everyone that could have been involved in it, and we got no cooperation, understandably so, I guess. But the people that we spoke to in our film, and I think something I want to hit on, too, to your listeners, is when we started this film, we intentionally wanted to stay right down the middle. That's why we spoke to both Democrats and Republicans, and we really tried to be down the middle because we didn't want to be categorized as just some, oh, it's some left-wing people, or oh, it's you know, propaganda. We really wanted to present the facts, which is why the people that did end up in our film, the three stories that are included, they were not the only ones that we heard or the only people that approached us, because believe me, we heard everything from, oh, you need to talk to my uncles, brothers, cousin. These were the three that we felt we could substantiate, and they made the most sense to us. So I just wanted to get that out there, too.
Yeah, the truth is that Scott and I actually are both, you know, registered Republicans. And, you know, coming into it, it's we're as skeptical as anybody else. And as far as the stories go, we did as much research and documentation as we could. But whether or not they're true for, I think, both Scott and I is sort of, doesn't matter, because looking at the stories and looking at the reasoning of why they would be true, and then following that line of reasoning through the oil crisis, through the formation of Standard Oil Company and the breakup when they monopolized the industry, through the way that gas prices have skyrocketed recently, and looking at the way that just, you know, we go into to today to look and see how gas prices are manipulated now. And it all just, it's a line.
You want to take some phone calls?
Sure.
I'm sure you don't have any problem with that. Although, again, we don't want you to give away the whole documentary.
Right. We're trying to be conscious of that.
Yeah, no, I can dig that. All right, let's see what rolls out here. Daryl, you're on KMJ. Go for it. Hi.
Okay. I'm curious. Are you there?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Have you run across in your research anyone by the name of Ray Covey?
That name doesn't sound familiar to me off the top of my head.
You might want to write that one down. He did a plan for a carburation system that worked on an old Chrysler that got about 90 miles to a gallon that was documented. And as a matter of fact, I did buy one of his plans in the early 80s and used part of it on an old Toyota that I had. And, you know, obviously I didn't have the funding to do a big research project on it, but I was able to get almost 40 miles to a gallon when I was getting only about 22 at the time. And, you know, I didn't put enough into the darn thing, and I ended up burning the engine up. But for a long time, about 6 months, I was kind of a happy camper. And this is project that is like near and dear to my heart, and I'd built a website a couple of years ago, and I couldn't get anybody interested like what you were saying. At $2 a gallon, they all got numb to it, and now at $4 a gallon, maybe somebody will wake up. But you know, it's like a frog in the hot water. If you just turn it up a little bit at a time, people get used to it and say, oh, that's just the way it is. And I can totally appreciate that, and I know that I will be going to the Tower Theater if no one else shows up.
Well, we appreciate that.
Oh, I'm sure the place will be packed.
Well, you know, the thing is, Ray, what's so interesting is there are hundreds of stories like this. And you're going to tell me in a country, a great country like ours that put men on the moon and do brain surgery with lasers, that we can't come up with this technology?
Yeah, I know. I know. But I noticed with his technology, he says he got 40 miles of the gallon and it burned his engine up. I don't know if...
Yeah, well, I don't... That might not go to market.
I don't know if the two is, you know, related or not. Steve, you're on KMJ. Hi.
Hi. I'm one of the nine guys that's been harassing you for the last several weeks, Ray.
Uh-huh.
And I won't mention the name of the company. People recognize my voice because I call on all the... ag dealers and now truck dealers in all of the Southwest, California, Arizona, Nevada, even northern Mexico. What I've run into with a product that was invented last year is that to get certified through the California Air Resources Board and pass the EPA is a series of hurdles and webs that are almost impossible. You're looking at a minimum. If I started approval testing today, about 3 to 4 years of process, a cost to my company of about $100,000 with a product that we already know is proven to reduce fuel consumption, reduce emissions, increase horsepower, and increase lubricity in both gasoline and diesel. But because of the bureaucratic morass and all of the different agencies, I'm not sure if you're aware of it or not, but, you know, in addition to the California Air Resources Board, there are a half a dozen different air boards in California. We've got one for the San Joaquin Valley, one for Sacramento, one for Los Angeles, one for Santa Barbara, and they all have different standards. I wonder if the gentleman you have on the show today are aware of how difficult it is that if you have a proven product that we've tested literally with thousands of people and had the same positive effects every single time, are they aware of how tough it is to get through the California bureaucracy?
Oh, absolutely. And we'll even go a step farther. And when we went to Washington, D.C., one of the things that we found most shocking is, you know, the House Energy Committee is there to police the industry for us, the people. And when they were trying to get answers from refineries and oil executives, who, by the way, did not have to go under oath, which is shocking in itself, when they try to get information about why the prices are what they are, and then you realize that the two chairmen of that committee, Joe Barton, who's a Republican from Texas, and Sam Hall, also a Republican from Texas, the two chairmen have taken the most money from the oil industry of anyone in Washington, D.C. So it's kind of tough to ask people to police an industry that they receive the most money from, don't you think?
Scary. Bill, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yeah, I've got a question. With the age of computers and computers running cars, are you there?
Yeah, we're right here.
Okay, well, I don't hear anything in the background. That's why I asked.
Because we're listening to you.
Oh, okay. A computer can control the fuel mixture of an engine by monitoring the oxygen in the exhaust and calibrate for air density, air temperature. The new flex fuel vehicles even know whether you're running E85 or straight gasoline. If all that you say, you know, the computer should be able to control this, like you said, we know how to do laser surgery and all that. Why don't cars get any better mileage now than they did? I mean, all this stuff you're talking about comes up every time there's a rise in fuel prices, and this is kind of like black helicopters and, you know.
Oh, please don't go there.
You know, I sort of think it's conspiratorial or, you know. So that's my question. I mean, a computer can control, a satellite on Mars or going to Mars and things of that nature. Then why can't it control an engine and get 100 miles to a gallon? That's the question that nobody ever seems to answer.
Well, let me try and answer it the best I can. That's our point. When we talk to Shell's, you know, one of their leading research scientists who they named a building after, and he's telling us they were getting, you know, 347 miles per gallon on a Fiat convertible in the late 60s. We have that same question. Well, then why aren't we doing that now? That's the point of our movie.
Okay. No, I mean, that was a question I want to get out. I mean, it's, you know, the environmentalists, we need electric cars, no pollution. Well, electric cars pollute. They just pollute somewhere else. Are you there?
Yeah. You're really worried about us, aren't you?
Well, I can't hear you. I mean, I don't know if you're talking to somebody or nobody there. But
no, we got you loud and clear. Thanks for the call, and good point about the electric cars, too. Quick breather here. We'll be right back. A few more minutes with our guests. We will continue on the Appleton program here at KMJ. Gas Hole, the name of the documentary, as narrated by Peter Gallagher. I just keep throwing it in there for that star quality, you know. And I know you want to know about websites and all of that stuff and everything, and we'll get to it. Just, you know, stay cool. Back at you here. We continue with Jeremy and Scott on KMJ and their documentary called Gas Hole. And we still have many calls to get through, but we only have a few minutes left. But we're going to do our best. We're going to do our best. Gentlemen, how long did it take to make this documentary?
It took us more than 2.5 years since the start of it.
It was
a long road for us.
Was it an expensive documentary to make?
Not as expensive as other films, I think, primarily because Scott and I really have done just about everything ourselves. You know, it's basically just been Scott and I and a camera and some lights and and just out there trying to find what we can find.
And was this all out of your pocket, too?
Just about the whole thing, yeah. Those credit cards are maxed, that's for sure.
Oh, great. I would think with what you're trying to do and what you've exposed here, all in the name of trying to find something decent and good and help us, you know, get better mileage, that somebody like GM's alternative fuel divisions would probably love you. But I get the impression they don't.
They're, at least the people who saw the film, were not fond of what we're trying to do.
I don't think that they, well, you know, here's a quick example. General Motors, for example, they have a lot of flex fuel vehicles that they're selling in California, which is great. They're patting themselves on the back, and, you know, the byline in the newspaper reads, oh, flex fuel vehicles are up. But what they don't mention is there's only 3 ethanol stations in the entire state. So all these flex fuel vehicles are mainly running on petroleum. And so when we ask questions like that and just, you know, want some answers, they're not big fans of ours.
And the amazing thing is we actually don't pick on auto manufacturers hardly at all in the film. And so the fact that it's gotten, you know, sort of a negative response is kind of baffling to us because we didn't pick on them.
I don't think that was your point.
No, it's not our point. And so in some ways, it just, you know, these other stories that we've talked about, and, you know, where people have said that they've been threatened or bought out or whatever, you know, when you start the movie, you go, okay, well, maybe it's just, an old kook. But when you actually start to see a response from people ourselves, it sure helps to convince me and Scott that maybe these stories are true.
How about a website, guys?
That's www.gasholemovie.com. And then we actually have a MySpace page, too, which is MySpace/themoviegashole.
And you are scheduled for how many cities this thus far? You only did 7?
Well, we're in 41 cities right now.
Oh, good.
And we're adding more cities every day and trying to find different organizations that might want to benefit from our shows. So, you know, you can go on our website and send us an email or let us know that you want us to come to your town, and we'll try and accommodate everyone that we can.
And again, the Fresno date is in July? July 8th?
July 8th at the Tower Theater.
Okay, well, that'll be jammed up that night. That's going to be great. Well, I've enjoyed this, and I hope we haven't exposed too much of the documentary so people are curious enough to buy a ticket and show up. I'm sure they are.
Yeah, we have to get out some of the details. Otherwise, it just sounds, you know, that we're just, you know.
Oh, I hear you. I hear you.
Claims.
Any plans for a follow-up project?
We actually are interested in doing a narrative feature based on one of the stories, one of the technology stories, and that's what we're looking at maybe doing next.
Interesting. All right. Well, good luck to you both, and I'm super glad you had the time to join us this afternoon.
Well, thank you very much, Ray. We appreciate it.
Okay. Take care, fellas.
Thanks.
All right. Bye. That's Jeremy Wagoner and Scott Roberts, who have put together this great film called Gashole. And I say great because I think it's probably going to be. Because I love the subject matter. And as long as, you know, you can cover it with some semi-decent documentation, that at least whoever was doing whatever you say that they were doing was headed in that direction at the time that you say they were headed in that direction, was headed in that direction, then your credibility is good. So this is, yeah. I mean, I've lived here practically all my life, you know. And I've heard about these carburetors and, you know, hell, even my dad would talk about it. So I've really never believed it to be an urban legend. It was there. And you just wonder what happened. You know, are gas companies that evil? Or is it just forgotten technology? That's it. People did become fat and complacent with gas prices at the time, and there was no urgency for economy. And it was kind of like, who cares? I guess we'll never know. Of course, then again, too, we haven't seen the documentary yet, have we? This is KMJ.